Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Mark Stevens. He is a former journalist and an acclaimed author in Colorado. Mark and I will be discussing the power of relationships and the latest release of the popular S-Pulp Warrior series authored by his late friend, best-selling author Gary Riley. Good morning, Mark. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing great, Johnny. Thank you so much for having me.
Fantastic. It is a pleasure to have you on the air. If I recall, it's been about close to 2 years when you guys came and first introduced us to the wonderful S-Pulp Warrior series. So thank you very much for coming back. It's wonderful to have you with me.
Well, thank you. And I wish my partner, Mike Keith, could be with me here today, but he is overseas. So I appreciate, on behalf of both of us, I appreciate the opportunity.
Fantastic. Looks like he's having a good life. You and I have to work.
Yeah. He put in nearly 40 years in the newspaper business as an editorial cartoonist at the Denver Post, and he's earned some relaxation time. So my hat's off to Mike and a fantastic career.
Pick Up at Union Station is an entertaining read. It is very engaging, a definite page-turner. Congratulations for getting it out for everyone. Before we talk about the book, I do want to talk about your relationship. So let's start out by getting to know you a little bit better. Let's talk about you. What can you tell us about yourself growing up in Denver, I guess, in this case?
Yeah, actually, I grew up outside Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think the most important thing about me is to know that I grew up as the son of two librarians. I grew up in an absolute world of books and information. My father worked at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He had his master's in library science. This is back in the 1960s. He really worked at a pretty high level with computers in the engineering library and trying to get computers to send information to one another back in the 1960s. And my mother also later got her master's in library science, but she was the one who really showed me the entertainment value of reading fiction. And I really picked up the bug from her.
Yeah.
I had two brothers, but I was the one who just really latched on to books and reading and writing. And, I just, thinking back, I think it's so, I was so lucky to grow up in a house where information was valued and where learning was valued. And just continued exploration and curiosity was really, really valued. It was just a great, I was lucky. I was lucky to grow up in that kind of world where school and all that stuff was valued. So I knew early on I wanted to be a reporter. Mm-hmm. I even from the eighth grade on, I remember watching Huntley Brinkley on the news. I would take the Boston Evening Globe from my mother when she'd bring it home, and she worked downtown, she'd bring it home, and I'd have to go to the couch and read the newspaper, even in the eighth grade. So all the way through high school, I worked for the high school newspaper, I worked in college for the college newspaper, and I got a job as a reporter right away after college in Boston, and then Los Angeles, and then finally moved to Denver to work for the Rocky Mountain News back in the 1980s. And around that time, having been a reader and sort of in the back of most reporters' minds is some ideas about maybe writing a book, whether it's nonfiction or fiction. I knew an awful lot of writers who wanted to write a book, and I was one of them, and I just always had this idea about trying to write a novel. And then a friend turned me on to mysteries. I'd never really explored the world of mystery writing, but back in the 1980s, I started my efforts at trying to put a story together on paper, and it took me a while, but I worked my way through many, many drafts of different books and different agents and different situations, but finally got published in 2007. So that's a very quick overview of growing up in a world of books, becoming a reporter, really thinking that writing a book would be something I wanted to do.
Well, that sounds fabulous. How did you, Mike, and Gary become friends?
Well, Mike and Gary knew each other first. Mike met Gary back in the 1970s at the University of Colorado at Denver, and they were both in a film class together, a class about movie making, and they connected there over animation because they were both interested in animation.
And interesting.
Mike and I met at the Denver Post when I worked at the Denver Post in the early 1990s. Mm-hmm. So at that point, Mike had known Gary for 15 or so years, and Mike and I were friends, but we didn't really know each other super well until we played together in a band. Mm-hmm. And Mike and I started spending more time together, and he came to realize how much fiction meant to me, and he had finally said, and I'll never forget it, in 2004, when Mike said, "You've got to meet my friend Gary," and because Gary, he said, was one of the most dedicated writers he'd ever met. So I met Gary in 2004, and we started hanging out, going to coffee, and sure enough, as Mike predicted correctly, Gary was the most unbelievably dedicated fiction writer I had ever come across, and I had been in writing groups. I'd been involved with Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, which has probably 500 members. I'm one of these social people who love to meet other writers and get to know them. I'd never met anybody who was as open and, you know, he was a very private individual in a lot of ways, but he was the most giving critic in a good way of my stuff, and he really, really helped me shape my work and helped me polish it and think it through. And so Gary and I became friends right away, and I started reading his books all in draft form, but slowly but surely realized that he had two dozen completed manuscripts. It was just unbelievable. Yeah, just unbelievable. I mean, the quantity of books he had produced on his own without ever being published was just remarkable, and they were all in incredible shape. They were beautiful, beautiful books.
Very interesting. Coming back to Gary, I mean, even though he passed away before being able to realize that his books had been published and so forth, he lived a very rich life. So please share that with us.
Well, he did, and I think that's a really important point. Depending on your definition of rich,
right?
And this really goes to the heart of his main character, and I think it goes to the heart of all of us. And it's a complex issue in some ways, but I think Gary and what he stood for, and Murph, the main character he writes about in the Asphalt Warrior books, really ask a question about our purpose and what we're doing with our lives, and really stopping to think through what we're doing with our time. And there's a real fundamental kind of paradox or conundrum with Murph, in that Murph really wants to control his world and keep a very, very simple life. He doesn't want to get scooped up in the big, busy world of corporations and bureaucracies and rushing around and being part of this whole world of suits and ties, for instance. He just wants to keep a very simple apartment. He wants to keep a very simple life, and he wants to drive a cab, and in fact he wants to earn as little money as possible, which of course is dead set against what most of us are taught about getting ahead and getting more and accumulating more. And Murph doesn't want to accumulate anything more than books. He does buy books, and he wants to become a novelist. That's the Gary mm-hmm. Riley's alter ego. But he did. Gary did live a rich life, and I think you could say Murph lives a rich life because they're doing what they want to do, and they are both interested in thinking about human behavior, mm-hmm. and also they're stimulated by ideas. Gary himself, when he passed away, didn't have a lot to his name. He was an indigent, actually, in some ways. He was an indigent. Mm-hmm. He hadn't accumulated a lot, but he was one of the nicest guys I'd ever met. He provided just lots of humor, mm-hmm. For the people around him. And mm-hmm. he left 10 of the funniest books I've ever read in the Asphalt Warrior series. Mm-hmm. And that alone is quite a gift, I think, to the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Very interesting. What made the relationship you guys share with each other special and unique?
Great, great question. I can tell you that as a writer, when you meet other writers, one thing that is so helpful is to get feedback on a book that you're working on. And Gary was the most giving, generous reader. So he was a great writer, but he was a terrific reader and a most thoughtful critic. I mean, sometimes you give a book to somebody to read and you say, I'm working on this book, can you take a look? And they might read it, you might meet for coffee and talk about it for an hour mm-hmm. and walk away. Gary would do that, but then would start a conversation that might last months and months. And he would keep emailing and saying, I read your book again, or mm-hmm. the third time, the fourth time. I was looking at this one section of this book, and I was thinking about this, and what if you tried something about some other scene? And he would cough up some ideas and suggestions mm-hmm. that weren't meant to try to take over the book. He was really trying to see the book from your point of view
mm-hmm.
and really help you get it better. So I can tell you and anybody who's listening, as long as I had been writing, I would not have been published had Gary not helped me kind of bring my work up to another level. And
mm-hmm.
so the relationship had to do with, that investment in another person. And Gary invested so much in me, I tried to return the favor and give him equal amount of feedback and ideas about his works. But
right.
I really want to come back to your question.
Yeah.
And that is the relationship. And I think in some ways this goes back to Gary and Murph's point about what's kind of off kilter about our world today is we are all rushing around. We're all tweeting little quips and comments. We don't really, and I'm as guilty as anybody, but we don't really stop and connect with other people face to face. And Gary could do that better than anybody. We could sit for hours and really that kind of old-fashioned just sit and enjoy another person's company and talk about movies and books,
mm-hmm.
really get to know each other on a real thorough level. It wasn't just these quick little hits like pinballs bouncing around in a pinball machine running around, like we do all day around the city, just trying to keep up. I mean, he really could savor a conversation, and that really formed a pretty deep relationship. And I know I was one of the lucky few to really get to know him on that level.
I believe from listening to you and reading his work, Gary is pretty much a present moment guy. He's in the moment. Enjoy now.
Couldn't agree more. I really believe that's true. And his character, if people read the books, that's exactly how he breaks down every scene into tiny micro moments. He thinks through everything that's happening. And that's a really good point. I mean, Gary certainly could talk about things that happened to him in the past, but you're absolutely right. I think he liked living in the moment. He loved stories. He loved movies. And I think, of course, I mean, we all love stories. We all love movies.
Right,
we all love
right.
television. But Gary was very, when you were around him, he was very much right there with you. He wasn't mm-hmm. being distracted by a million things, that's for sure.
He has a appreciation for the immediate connection, that is. He has a sort of a genuine connection at that moment in time. Like you were talking about, if he's with you, the work that he's done with you, he's genuinely interested in that moment and how to help you to get to the next level, whatever that level may be. He's there, he's honest, sincere, and really connecting. And what I'm looking at from a relationship standpoint of view as I speak about that, he has a genuine respect for you as a human being first. And then from that respect,
yep.
he gets to trust. And then, of course,
yep.
cooperation comes afterwards.
Yeah, one thing I agree with that completely. And one thing that's interesting in looking at Murph, mm-hmm. and then we've started publishing Gary's books that are based on his experiences during his time in the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
when Gary was a military policeman. And the things that come out of both books is that the individual he's writing about, Murph the cab driver, or Palmer is the name of the military police officer,
mm-hmm.
They are not defined by their organizations. They are completely defined as unique, one-of-a-kind individuals who really see themselves apart from the organization. Each of them in the Vietnam books have a completely different tone, of course, than the very funny Asphalt Warrior series. But these are people who understand that they are individuals first.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking a lot lately about how remarkable it is when you really stop and think about it, that there's a few billion people on the planet and every single person is different. I mean, I know
mm-hmm.
it's sort of an obvious thought in some ways.
Right.
But I think Gary really understood that, and he really worked to make his fictional characters have that special one-of-a-kind flavor, each of them. They're not stereotypes by any stretch of the imagination. They're individuals first, and they refuse to be seen as connected with or identified as members of an organization. They really are human beings, individual human beings, first and foremost. And I think Gary wanted to see and understand the people he took into his world, because he was a bit of a recluse. He was a bit of a loner. He liked alone time. There's no question about that. But he had many, many, many individual relationships. Mike Keefe, my partner, talks about how Gary partitioned his world into smaller conversations. He liked that one-on-one time, or one-on-two, a group of three or a group of four at the most. But Gary would really, really wanted to get to know you as a person. And he just appreciated other people and for all their unique qualities. And when you read the Asphalt Warrior series and see Murph go around and get involved in all the situations he gets involved in, which, of course, is against his his basic premise in life, is never get involved in the lives mm-hmm. of his passengers. But he's always getting tangled up, always getting involved in strange situations. And because as you pointed out, Johnny, he slows the world down and appreciates mm-hmm. and understands the variety of people that he encounters, again, as unique people. And that's what makes the book so refreshing. There's no stereotypes. They're all individuals.
Very interesting. Why did you guys, you and Mike, decide to publish Gary's works posthumously?
Well, I mean, the answer is pretty easy for me. It was a slam dunk mm-hmm. to try to do something. These books were so good when I read them. At a really fundamental level, when Gary would hand me one of these books, and again, he had 25 novels when he died, and I'd read them all. And of the ones that he would give me, the Asphalt Warrior ones were the ones that, when I read them, I felt like I was reading something completely different. I'd never read anything like them before. And I knew that the way I felt inside when I was reading those books, that I had to share that feeling, that experience with other readers, and I wanted to get it out there. Mike felt the same way. Mike, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist from the Denver Post, he and I are both voracious readers. I've been reading for since I was 8 or 9. You know, when you come across a voice that unique, I just couldn't imagine going the rest of my life knowing that Gary's books had just been left to the dust. So we, in fact, I said to Mike, and Mike and I had a conversation when Gary was sick. I said, "You've got to go to Gary and talk to him about this." And Gary had chatted with me about maybe doing some independent publishing of them or maybe putting them online, but he was just getting too weak toward the end to really make those decisions. And so Mike went to Gary, and Gary wrote out as part of his will, the third sentence in his will gave me and Mike permission to publish his books after he died. And it took us about a year to come up with a plan, but we started in the summer of 2000, and I have to do the math in my head. I think it was 2012. Yeah, we did the first book came out, and now we're up to 8 total books that have come out. But you know, it really wasn't a choice. We had some struggles along the way and some issues here and there, but overall, I remember not too long ago getting an email back from Mike because of some reviews we're starting to see come in for the latest, and he said, "It all makes it worthwhile, doesn't it?" And it's just so true. Not too long ago, I got an email from a woman who helps choose books for the Princeton University Library, and she had come across Gary's stuff. She said Gary is one of her favorite writers of all time. This is a woman who picks books for the Princeton University Library, and she makes sure that the Princeton University Library is collecting his books, and that's just, it just thrills me to no end. It just thrills me.
Right. So that's a fantastic story. What do you think inspired Gary in all his storytelling?
Well, I wish I understood that a little bit better. I can just say that here was a guy who just loved the power of entertainment to and he understood how fantastic it was to be able to watch a movie or a TV show or read a book and to be transported away. I've talked to his brothers and sisters about that, and they just said from an early point on, Gary was always wanting to tell stories and be creative and write. Again, none of his other brothers or sisters quite had the bug that Gary had to be that kind of storyteller. I think he liked fantasy. He liked being in a kind of world where he could think about the entertainment. You know, he could distract himself. And I think Gary had some things to say. I think Gary really had something to say about society, and he had a real strong attitude about, again, coming back to this theme of individual versus organizations. He really wanted to get that out there. I think he really believed in the power of the individual, and that comes through. It really comes through.
So true. So interesting.
Yeah.
What makes the character of Murph so special in the book?
Well, I think, again, because we don't often encounter people out in the world who work a little bit, but their main goal is to earn as little money as possible. In fact, if you read the book, Murph has this very, very careful system where he tries to make sure that he doesn't earn more than a certain amount of money each week. Mm-hmm. He has it down to a science in terms of what he needs to cook a hamburger, to go to the laundromat. His needs are so little, and he's minimized his life down to a very small footprint. So there's that aspect. And then the paradox is that he claims, and this is where the humor comes in, he claims that he will never get involved in getting involved in situations where his passengers have something where he needs to step in and save the day. Well, you know, of course, a passenger might leave a necklace on the back seat.
Yeah.
Or a passenger might ask a favor. Mm-hmm. Or, in the latest book, suddenly he's taking a passenger across town, and he has a conversation with this individual, arrives at the destination, looks in the back seat, and realizes that his passenger has died. And what happens is that Murph, even despite his claim that he'll never get involved in the lives of his passengers, ultimately does what most human beings would do. In fact, Murph probably goes beyond and goes to the nth degree of getting super involved in trying to figure out what happened. In the fifth book, Dr. Lovebeads, for instance, which was a Colorado Book Award finalist, by the way, two girls who he had transported to a concert later go missing from the concert and can't be found, and the police come around to ask Murph what happened on the ride. Well, because he has empathy, huge empathy, for many, many individuals that are around him. In fact, he actually loves other people, even though he wants to claim that he wants to stick to himself. He, in the case of Dr. Lovebeads, he goes undercover because he gets wind of the fact that the girls have joined a hippie commune in Boulder, and so he dresses up like a Lovebead salesman with his VW van and all that kind of stuff and his hippie music, and he has to go undercover in the commune to go look for the girls. And as they say, hilarity ensues. I mean, Murph is constantly constantly wrestling with his issue of identity. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to be seen as a fraud out in the public. He constantly wants to try to do the right thing, and that forces him into situations that he'd rather not be in. But ultimately, his quest is to help put the world back the way it should be. In many cases, he's got missing people or strangers that are doing weird things, and he just needs to get to the bottom of it. So Murph is a one-of-a-kind character. I have so many people have told me that when I've given them the books to read or encouraged them to read them, and they come back to me and they just say, there's no other character like this in fiction. you could point to some others like Ignatius Riley in The Confederacy of Dunces, or there are many, many stories about individuals like even Catcher in the Rye, but, these are... Nothing is really played for the humor the way Gary Riley used Murph to play for humor.
So interesting. How much of Gary is in the character?
Well, I would really say that Murph is Gary's alter ego completely. I have no doubt that a few little moments, Gary did drive a cab for 14 years. I have an idea that he kept some of the little incidents as sparks for his stories. I think, Murph wants to keep a pretty simple life, and I know Gary kept a pretty simple life. I think Murph is Gary's alter ego. I mean, there's probably some inflated elements for sure, just for the purposes of heightening the drama. But Gary was an extremely funny person, when you talk to him. Loved to laugh, always looking for the humor. And Murph is just there's five jokes on every page, and you just don't see them coming. really enjoyable. And the other thing about Murph that's worth pointing out in terms of your question is that Murph, like Gary, was an unpublished novelist. And many of the passages or situations get into discussions about the frustrations of being an unpublished novelist. Mm-hmm. And so there's a huge channeling of Gary's frustrations with the business and not getting published, and he poured a lot of that into his thoughts for Murph and Murph's approach to kind of thinking about the, you know, how difficult it is to break into that business.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Gary Reilly in Brendan Murphy. Lots.
I thought so.
Yeah.
How has Gary's books been received by the public? I know that his initial books have won awards and so forth. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, all of the books, including the latest, have been Denver Post bestsellers. In fact, just this week, Pickup at Union Station launched earlier this month, and it landed at number 3 on the Denver Post bestseller list. All have been Denver Post bestsellers. A couple have been number 1s. Two of the books, number 2, which was Ticket to Hollywood, and number 5, Dr. Lovebeats, have been named Colorado Book Award finalists. Neither of them won, but they were one of 3 finalists, one in 2013, one in 2014. So huge honor there to be recognized by judges for the quality of the writing. And then two other things I'd like to point out. Number 1 is a huge fan base that is growing and developing from folks all over the country who are getting into the Murph spirit and are just waiting eagerly for the very next book to come out and really can't wait to get their hands on it. And then the other really cool thing that's happened in the last few months is a national public radio conversation on a Saturday morning between Scott Simon on National Public Radio, Saturday Weekend Edition, and his cab-driving book reviewer, a wonderful man named Bill Grozier, out of London, who got wind of the whole series and read the first 5 books and was discussing the series with Scott Simon on National Public Radio and called them huge fun and really raved about Gary's writing and the Murph character and the whole thing. And, you know, we've just seen a really nice boost in sales since that mention, because, of course, Will was right. These are great books.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Slowly but surely. I mean, it's a very difficult publishing environment, as we all know. And personally, I think it's wonderful that so many books are available to read. And I think it's absolutely wonderful that so many writers are getting a chance to publish their books through all sorts of different means. But that means on the publishing end, as a publisher and our company, just trying to get attention for a writer who is so talented, it's, you know, you're fighting against a waterfall, Niagara Falls waterfall of books every day coming out.
Yeah.
So you're just, you know. But slowly but surely, we think we're really gaining traction, and the, you know, it's a kind of a book that people read, and because it's so different, it's so easy to tell other people about it and spread the word. And you feel like you're discovering something. So we don't have a big advertising budget or a big PR team behind us. We're just slowly trying to get the word out.
Interesting. So true.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to know. Coming back to the relationship that Gary, Mike, and you have, would you consider that something that evolved over the years to whereby not only you guys were sharing creativity in terms of critiquing one another's work, was there more in terms of really understanding life as is, because you were a journalist, so you have a vast amount of richness in your life in so many ways, and Gary coming from his end of the equation, having so much richness in terms of experience and being actually a cab driver where you meet so many different people, different walks of lives. How does that all sort of like come together in a gumbo pot?
Well, that's another great question. And it really makes me think that just to look at the power of books, Gary and I were probably two very different people. He drove a cab for 14 years. He was in the Army. I was not in the military. I was a reporter. Yet, you know, we both had been around Denver for a very long time. You know, we met over fiction at a point where he could help me immensely. He helped me immensely with my writing and my craft. Did I really understand and know him as well as I should have? Probably not. Did I ever really ask him all the questions I would have wished I had asked about how he viewed the world and really tried to pin him down, so to speak, about his attitude about a whole host of different issues? Probably not. It's one of those things where I feel like I got to know his spirit and his the things he cared about. I mean, I know he cared very much for his girlfriend. I happen to know he loved kids because I would frequently bring my two daughters to the coffees, and he was always very nice to them. He loved dogs. We'd be sitting outside a coffee shop in South Central Denver, and he loved dogs that would come around. So you'd get to know his spirit a little bit. But I guess I would say I was guilty of not being as, you know, kind of really in-depth kind of conversations that might, you know, might put me in a better situation today to really talk about Gary and what he stood for. Nonetheless, he left us 25 novels, which we can get that world view. And it really does come back to Murph and that human interest in making sure that other people are okay. And Murph ultimately wants to make sure that everything is just fine. He will do what it takes, and I think Gary also would do what it takes. I know Gary had some tough years, and I think coming out of the military and seeing what he was not in the actually out in the jungle, but he was in Vietnam on the military base. He saw some saw enough that it was pretty harrowing. And as folks will see in the next book when it comes out, the second book will come out, we think, later this year or early 2016, you know, Gary had some of the most, you know, anytime you're in war, in the middle of a war zone, you're seeing some things that, you know, most of us try to pretend, you know, aren't happening around the world every day.
Right.
And those can really shape a person. So Gary had some dark stuff to get through, and he had some tough years, I'm sure. But again, here's a guy who ultimately ended up trying to write an amazing series that entertained and lightened the day for people who read the Murph series. So that probably wasn't a great answer to your question, which was a good question. But you know, Gary reached out, and Gary was somebody who tried to help others. Here's an example of Gary's willingness to help. I occasionally would mention over coffee about a friend who'd written a book and was trying to get it published, and Gary would say, "Send it to me. I want to read it." You know, he would get so excited. I had a friend in Massachusetts who emailed me and wanted me to read the book, and Gary said, "Find out if he'll let me read it too." And here's a guy thousands of miles away, never meet him. And Gary wanted to read a book and see if he could help analyze what needed work. And Gary would do that kind of thing. That's pretty special. Pretty special.
So true. I just imagine him basically meeting you or me or whatever in the end as we sit down. It's like, okay, what's your story?
Exactly.
Same, Gary, very simple question. What's your story?
Yep. That's Gary. He would proceed to say, you know, 3 or 4 hours later, well, keep going. I have more time. You know? Yeah. Yep.
Very interesting. Does that make Gary stand out as a writing mentor and editor in some ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what a model, too. And I really try to think about that when other people come to me for help. And I, you know, people do come to me for help. I've been lucky to have been published and doing fairly well. You know, some little bit of visibility, not very much, but a tiny bit of visibility. And, you know, people do come to you for help. And, you know, you think about how much time Gary gave to me and to others. And I try to think of how much help it would mean to them if I could stop and really try to connect. And he was a real, real role model in that sense, in terms of just saying, you know, what's the harm of taking a few hours and really trying to get inside this story? Not just reading it and giving a response or reading it and giving a reaction, but really understanding the story and what's working and maybe what's not. And so, yeah. And that wasn't something that Gary did, you know, as a thought process. Mm-hmm. It was just who he was.
Yeah.
If he was going to read something, he was going to climb up inside that story and understand it from first page to last. And he,
right.
I still have copies of the emails he would send me in the middle of the night with new ideas and
yeah.
new suggestions. And so helpful, so helpful. Definitely a mentor.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Gary's books?
You know, I would say the number one thing is to pick up a little bit of Murph in your life, which is to say, stop and take a look. Murph constantly understands, like nobody else, his position in his life.
Mm-hmm.
He understands that he has control up to a point of his world, and he's built his world the way he wants it, because that's who he is. And I think Murph stands for and urges everybody to stop and appreciate what they've got, and to stop and think through, you know, why they're doing what they're doing, to understand what motivates them to, you know, head off to work at dawn and come home after dusk. And he, you know, he understands the relationship between effort and reward. He understands and looks at bureaucracies and structures, and he understands power, what power means, people who get power in certain situations. Murph has this funny relationship with a guy named Rollo, who runs the cage inside the taxi company where he works. And, you know, Murph and Rollo go at it. And Murph is somebody who, again, just stands for the power of the individual versus the power of the organization. Murph doesn't, you know, like his feelings about the bureaucracy of the Army. And there's many, many quips in the Murph books about the Army and his previous life in the Army. And in fact, the Vietnam, you asked about the reviews earlier, and the
right,
there's a great book reviewer named David Wilson with the Vietnam Veterans of America, and he has just been nothing but supportive of Gary's books, both the Murph series and the first of the Vietnam books. And in his latest review of Pickup at Union Station, David again pointed out how many times Murph is referring to his days in the Army. Well, kind of like MASH, the old TV show, and how Radar O'Reilly would constantly just, you know, everybody be just kind of rolling their eyes about the bureaucracy and the silly self-importance of the, you know, military generals. That's Murph, too. Murph is constantly seeing through assumed power, and, you know, if there are more badges and stripes on the chest, you know, he probably just sees right through that. He sees right to the person. He wants nothing to do with that kind of game. He sees it all as a game.
Right. I see Gary as someone who sees people straight in the heart. He's authentic. He's a humble person. And pretty much he speaks from the heart, and he expects you to be the same if you want to be in his inner circle.
Johnny, I couldn't have said it better myself. You got it. I think that's exactly right. He wants a real person to interact with, and he knows that that's where real relationships start.
Right.
You can't bring a lot of assumptions and presumptions, and, you know, it's be in the moment and be a real person and sit here and have a cold iced latte and let's talk about what's going on and just be here and let's relate to each other as people. We all have access to the same emotions. We all have access to the same knowledge if we want it. We're no different. Our backgrounds are different, but let's sit here and talk about the world. And Gary could see through a phony like nobody's business. Murph's favorite TV show, by the way, is Gilligan's Island. And, you know, if you look at Gilligan versus other, you know, the Howells, you know, I mean, it just, or the Skipper and the Professor, it's really interesting to think about, you know, islands, being on an island. Murph is sort of in his own island. There are all sorts of interesting things you can think about there in terms of just relationships and power and who's got the latest plan or scheme. I mean, Gilligan's Island, they're always coming up with some new scheme or idea, and Gilligan's always getting sort of tangled up in that too, just the way Murph gets tangled up in stuff.
Right.
So,
where can someone go to buy the books, get more information about Gary, and keep up with the Asphalt Warrior series?
Yeah, well, if you go to theasphaltwarrior.com, that's where the main website is, theasphaltwarrior.com. There are daily posts on Facebook from little quips and clips from the book, and that's Facebook, The Asphalt Warrior. And he's also on Twitter, which is Asphalt_Warrior. And there are tweets each day, which include those same little quips from the books. And they are available everywhere you can buy books. They're completely distributed through Amazon, through any independent bookstore. You'd be able to walk in and order those books. We do have distribution on a national scale. They're available on Kindle and should be easy to find.
Wonderful. How would you like for your friend Gary to be remembered?
Well, my dream is that Gary is mentioned on a national level by folks who know that here was a guy. It's one thing to just sort of casually toss out the fact that Gary wrote 25 books and never saw one of them published. He had one short story published in the late 1970s that was later picked up in the Pushcart Prize Anthology, one of the biggest short story prize anthologies in the country. The only thing Gary had published was one short story. Well, 25 novels later, I have friends who work on fiction. They say, I've finished 3 books and I haven't been published. I finished 5. I haven't been published. Gary was the most dedicated writer. He left 25 books behind. So far, the track record to date, this guy was a quality, thoughtful, very smart writer. And I think, you know, I'd like Gary to be remembered as one of the best fiction writers this country ever produced. And I believe that. That's my wish. And we've seen some evidence of that. I think it's just his legend will continue to grow.
Fantastic. What is next in the series?
Well, the next in the Asphalt Warrior series Actually, I don't have the title handy for the eighth book. That'll be out next summer. The next in Gary's works that we'll put out that's not Asphalt Warrior will be the second in his Vietnam works, and that book is called The Detachment. And it is a 150,000-word novel that I just recently reread. Actually, there's a little bit more of a story to it. There were parts of it I hadn't read before at all. Mm-hmm. But I have read Matterhorn by Carl Marlantis. I've read Tree of Smoke by Dennis Johnson. I've read, of course, Timothy O'Brien, many, many other books about Vietnam. And I would put this right up there with all of those. The Detachment is just a masterpiece. Mike just read it too. He agrees. Mm-hmm. It's a phenomenal book. All takes place in 1 year, 90% of it in Vietnam. It's as harrowing and as human and as powerful as anything I've read about war. And we hope to get that out later this year or very early next. So,
fantastic.
Very excited about the next title.
Wonderful. How has the success of Gary's books impacted you personally?
Well, in the one word answer is huge. I mean, just having the opportunity to get behind his books now, getting to know Gary, seeing the success now, and, you know, I think Mike and I both say, you know, we were right. I mean, we have so many other people realizing and thanking us for putting his works out. They really appreciate it on a deep, deep level. So, I mean, I'm as proud of the work for Gary as I am some of my own stuff or even more. It's just such a joy to see the reaction and to see the story continue to grow. So it's had a huge impact on me personally, and it's just an absolute pleasure to spend time trying to get the word, trying to get Gary's words out there.
Wonderful. Let's talk about your work. Obviously, you are currently having some work out there, so let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, I write a mystery series. It's called the Allison Coyle Mystery Series, and it's about a female hunting guide up in the Flat Tops Wilderness, which is in western Colorado. Contemporary western-flavored mysteries. The third book just came out last November. In fact, a few days ago was named the Colorado. It was named the mystery category winner for the Colorado Book Award, which is a major state award.
Congratulations.
And it also won the Colorado Authors League Award for genre fiction in May. So it won two nice awards. The fourth book in the series the third book was called Trapline, if I didn't mention that. And the fourth book will be called Lake of Fire. And Lake of Fire comes out in September. And these are all sort of environmentally themed or issue-based books around issues in western Colorado and or the western United States. Lake of Fire just got a great advance review from Kirkus, and I'm starting to see some nice quotes come in from my fellow writers like Craig Johnson, who I think is a wonderful, wonderful writer from Wyoming who writes the Longmire series, and Craig gave me a wonderful advance quote for Lake of Fire, and so, yeah, I mean, Allison Coyle is based on a woman I met up in the Flat Tops Wilderness years ago, and just a very inspiring and energetic, smart, thoughtful, dynamic young woman who was also a hunting guide and developed a mystery series around her, and so far, so good.
Fantastic. Congratulations again on your accomplishment.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What three things can you share with aspiring authors that they can do to position themselves for success in the publishing industry?
You know, this is going to, you've probably heard this before, but just never stop writing. Gary is proof of that. Never stop writing. Keep writing. and write some more. Write every day. The only way to get better is to keep writing. I wrote for 23 years between the time I started writing and when I got published. I still believe do it every day, you're going to get better every day. And the second is really listen to feedback. And look for meaningful feedback. Really listen to it. You know, incorporate it. If you're not getting published and you're not getting an agent or an editor connected, it's probably because the work needs to be a little bit better. So really listen. Really listen. I mean, really, really listen and try to understand what people are saying. And I guess the third thing is go find yourself a friend like Gary Riley. And just... You know, look around as hard as you can and say, if I will invest time and really help you, will you invest time and really help me? And if some people have a writing group or critique group,
yeah.
And that might be the same thing. But if you don't have that, really look around. There might be some quiet guy over in the corner or woman who you could just reach out to and say, how about if we help each other? Because it's one thing to write a book, it's another to read it, and it's got to work for the reader. And if it's not working for the reader, then there's a way to make it better. There's a way to make everything better.
Right.
Every book that's been published could be a tiny bit better. But so just listen and make it a goal. Commit yourself to improving every sentence, every paragraph, every page, and the whole book.
So true. What I'm looking at also is that based on what you just said, you have to have the right intention. Because if you are pursuing writing just for the money, so to speak, then the intent is wrong. The intent needs to be in the writing, in the substance, in the content, and the rest will take care of itself.
Perfectly said. Yep, you've got to be committed to the story and let everything else fall into place after that. And Gary's sole goal was making it work on the page. That was his motivation. Sure, he wanted to be published. Yes, he had dreams of a big contract with Simon & Schuster, but, you know, he really cared about the quality of the prose on the page, and his revision of his work showed that. And he left these manuscripts there in nearly pristine condition.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Well, you know, I've said it for a long time. My father, who passed away much too young, left me with a line that I think works for a lot of situations, and it's this: to have a good time, give a good time. And it's as simple as that. If you want your meeting to go well, make the meeting go well. Have a good time, give a good time. Whether it's a party, a dinner, a coffee, it seems like a really simple recipe to just make for a good day, a good week, a good month, a good year. You know, it's up to you.
I love the recipe. If you want a good time, give a good time. I love it. Fantastic.
Yep.
That's really wonderful, Mark. So true. Mark, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Georgopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Marie will be hosting and conducting her biweekly Meditation for Moms series. She will be discussing how you can reclaim the real you with transformational meditation. Marie will also be talking about her worldwide consciousness movement, Meditation for Moms. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Mark, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day, sir.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.